We're going to start with a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2949. Jamie, if you could give us a quick overview.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. This bill authorizes a governing body of a county with population more than 570,000 to set a maximum dollar amount of $25,000 or more for total assessed value of manufactured structures. And so currently, this has been indexed to inflation to be $34,000, but currently when owners of a manufactured home hit $34,000, they essentially hit a property tax cliff. And this seeks to address that with some work that was adopted in the Dash A, with the Department of Revenue and okay. folks.
Rep. Gorsuch, you want to come up? This is your bill here. And what's the amendment that we have in progress?
All right. Good afternoon, committee. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. All set. All right. So Chair Haas, Vice Chair Bentz, members of the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. For the record, I'm Representative Chris Gorsuch from House District 49, which are the small eastern cities for the most part in Multnomah County. Thank you for allowing me to have time to speak with you today about House Bill 2949. HB 2949 actually came as a result of conversations I've had with constituents at a town hall, and it's a group of seniors living in a place called the Quail Hollow Manufactured Home Park. This is about 6 months ago. They were very concerned, expressing concern about receiving tax bills on their mobile homes that they had not expected. Had not budgeted for and had never received in the past. So speaking then with Multnomah County Commissioner Lori Stegman, who's the commissioner for our area, she's had similar discussions with constituents, which is why we've worked together to bring you this particular bill. One of these constituents has submitted testimony in favor of the bill, explaining the effect of her unexpected tax bill of more than $600. Linda McNerney goes on to say that she'd saved money for her funeral expenses that will now have to go towards this unexpected tax. The reason we have so many of our seniors and people living on fixed incomes having to make such stark choices is another harmful effect of the housing crisis, which I know you all are aware of. Manufactured homes have seen a surge in demand so that their assessed values have gone up sometimes by double digits. Our policy, therefore, hasn't kept up with these large increases because each change to the maximum amount exempted requires new legislation. As a result, we hear from a lot of retirees that their household budgets have been devastated by unexpected tax increases. So to be more flexible, our counterparts at Multnomah County are asking for the ability to adjust and create essentially a glide path so that as these values continue to rise, they won't have to wait for the next legislative session to address the issue. So as I said, we've worked with Commissioner Stegman, her staff, Justin Black with Multnomah County Government Relations, as well as their Division of Assessment, Taxation, and Recording, to create the bill that you have before you, including the Dash One Amendment. I, not surprisingly, urge you to pass this legislation so that we can grant some relief for our constituents on modest means. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can answer any questions.
Sure, thank you. These amounts vary throughout the rest of the state, aside from our three counties.
I believe they do, and the county will be up here shortly, so I'm sure that they could answer that, but I believe they do vary by county.
Questions? Okay, right. Sir, we'll let you go.
I know
you
have a Well, it's been a pleasure. Have a great afternoon. Thank you very much.
We have a sign-up sheet on this one.
Yes.
Taylor from Multnomah County.
Good afternoon. Was there anybody else or just me?
So you have all day.
All right. Well, Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Taylor Steenblock, here today with Multnomah County. Like Representative Gorsuch said, we've been working closely with his office to create House Bill 2949 with the amendments in front of you today. And you'll notice we have an A3 proposed amendment that I also would urge the support of. And that basically is just a technical fix. That means if the county doesn't act, then we can continue to function how we have been until the county decides to make a change to the cap in this legislation. So Representative Gorsuch hit a lot of the important issues that I was going to touch on today, especially regarding the housing crisis and how these mobile homes serve as naturally occurring affordable housing. And we really want to make sure that the people living in these homes can maintain their sense of community. A lot of our most vulnerable residents live in homes such as these. The barrier to owning one is lower than owning your own home. And especially in East County, where we have about 3/4 of our mobile homes, this is really something that people care a lot about. And we want to make sure that they can stay in their homes as long as possible. So really what it comes down to is we want to be able to figure out what works best for our constituents and make sure that this cap, which is currently functioning as a cancellation, both matches the needs of the constituents in Multnomah County, and also we want to make sure that it we can address the concerns regarding the property tax bill cliff. And if we were to, as a county, act and make this an exemption rather than a cancellation, that would mean that we would then potentially collect a tax only for the value after that tax credit would come into play. So we would really like to urge support on this. We're excited about working with Representative Gorsuch's office on this. And I also just received an email earlier from Washington County. They're very supportive of this bill as well, but we're not able to be here today. So thank you for your time. And I can answer any questions you might have as well.
Thank you. We do have Washington County's testimony in OLIS. Any questions? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was just curious, you said a credit. Please, it looks like what part of this are you calling a credit?
I'm sorry. It wouldn't be a credit. So basically what we have now is a cancellation, and the cancellation, so it's currently $34,000 in Multnomah County. If somebody's mobile home was valued at $34,001, they would then have to pay a full tax bill on all $34,001. If we were to make this into an exemption rather than a cancellation, then that would mean that they would only pay a tax on that $1 instead of $34,001.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
And I don't know what it's a maximum dollar amount of $25,000 or more. How far up, is there any lid at all on this?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, we don't currently, so this bill doesn't actually create a cap. It allows counties to decide the cap. We don't have a lid on it. It would only currently impact Multnomah County and Washington County. And so this is something that our two counties felt we needed to look a little more closely and decide what would work best for those counties with higher populations.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank
you. Any other questions? Taylor, thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
We do have an amendment. It is not quite ready to go. So we're going to close out the public hearing and work session on 2949. And now, if you will, I do want to clarify and get this out of the way. Really some housekeeping business on Senate Joint Resolution 25. And I will open up a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 21. Chris is here to fill us in if we need it. But the purpose, my hope here today, is to adopt an amendment only and not move the bill. And the reason is that the summary on the legislation itself is incorrect, and should anyone want to look at this bill or look it up, they will see the correct summary with this amendment attached to what the original intent was of the bill. Chris, any?
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I guess that sums it up pretty well.
I just did your job. I didn't mean to, sorry. So really, I mean, we have, especially over the last couple of years, debated to death what to do with property taxes and the tale of two houses and the tale of two businesses. And ultimately, this solution in this bill probably isn't one that will fly this session, but it is nonetheless a conversation we need to continue. But I do want to correct for the record just what make sure we get the correct summary should people look these bills up down the road. So Senator Benz, I don't know if you're willing to make the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment.
Senator Benz moves the dash one amendment to Senate Joint Resolution 21. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none. The amendment is added and adopted. And I think that's as far as we'll go on this bill. So thank you for indulging me on this. I'm going to close the work session on SJR 21. And I'll open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2460. Jamie, could you give us a quick rundown?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2460A deals with deferred property taxes when someone has died and there is an estate, and essentially deals with this when the estate is underwater. To get to the A version, Department of Revenue worked to get the language in line with the current practice. And so essentially this is gives conditions around when an individual would be responsible for outstanding property taxes if they inherited an estate, if they continue to live in the property or receive an interest in the property, but otherwise not.
So if someone inherits property that is underwater financially, what happens now?
And so what happens currently?
Yes.
So thank you, Chair, members of the committee. So Department of Revenue has stated that if the estate is thoroughly underwater so that when everything is liquidated, there's nothing left to pay those outstanding property taxes and the individual does not stay in the home, that they currently don't go after the individual. And so that this bill, as it's written, is in line with the administrative rules and current practice of DOR.
Okay. Thank you. I think this bill came from the Elder Law Division of the Oregon State Bar, and they're here to talk to us now. Christopher Hamilton.
Good afternoon. My name is Christopher Hamilton. I'm an attorney in Salem with McGinty Belcher and Hamilton Attorneys. I'm here today as a representative of the Elder Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. And the deferred property tax program was fairly well explained. The problem that we came to address was that under current law, there are cases when a homeowner passes away, the home is encumbered by liens in excess of value, and the heirs take their right under law and walk away. And the issue that sent us before you today was those heirs who had exercised that right to walk away then got presented with tens of thousands of dollars in tax bills that they didn't understand why they were getting. Department of Revenue has since acted internally to address their rules and the practices that led to those tax notices and address part of this issue. But we're here, after having discussed the issue with Department of Revenue, to incorporate those rule provisions into the statute so that it is more clear to Oregonians when they do and do not owe taxes of that nature, so that there is more certainty and so that the Senate and House get to look at any other attempts to alter the way that those rules are being put into place and being enforced.
I think we have it, but give us a hypothetical case that's common among this category.
Well, it's so a hypothetical case would be senior individual of modest means ends up borrowing against a house, economy goes down, as you know happened in the early decade, and at the time of their death, the mortgage on the house is worth $200,000. The house itself is only worth $175,000. Mm-hmm. At that and at some point in there, they had also taken part in the senior property tax deferral program because they are on a fixed income and aren't able to make their tax obligations. And the mortgage company forecloses, takes everything out of the house, and there is nothing left to pay senior property tax deferral, any other creditors of the estate, and nothing for the heirs to inherit. And for any other debt those heirs walk away and they owe nothing. For the senior tax property tax deferral program, there was a clause written that makes those heirs jointly and severally liable with their deceased senior parent who was on the program. So even without having received the benefit of the home, they were still exposed to those property taxes. So after that home gets foreclosed on, the bank has taken everything of value from it. They then get a tax bill for their parents' deferred property taxes.
Questions? Senator Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on line 12 of the bill, the language reads, is occupying, leasing out, or otherwise using the tax-deferred property more than 90 days. Does that mean for more than 90 days, or during more than 90 days? What, explain to us what that means, more than 90 days following.
My understanding of the language would be on day 91 after the death, if it was still in use, then there would be exposure. But it's giving, frequently what happens is you have an individual who moves in to take care of a parent, and part of that process is them being able to get their own stuff out of their parent's house, or it's being able to clear the tangible personal property that there wouldn't be liens against, like family photos, out of the house. But my understanding of the way it was written, and Department of Revenue could be reading the rule differently in the way they're enforcing it, and I would be happy to hear from Mr. Garst, was that that was giving a 90-day window to get out or stop using.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benz.
Right, and that's the way I read it, but it can be read several ways, so I just wanted you, for purpose of the record, to say what you just said, so that's good. The 90 days seems short, to be honest with you, given the nature of things. Do you know where that came from?
Chair Haas, Senator Benz, that was the number currently being used by Department of Revenue in their rules. The elder law section would have no objections whatsoever to extending that time period to give individuals more time to process and get out. But this was a compromise position, and so that's where we ended up.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. The question would be them not being surprised when they didn't know about it. In other words, maybe the house has no value. Maybe they're staying in there for reasons having to do with not having any other place to go. Mm-hmm. And so the 90 days, some of these liens can be a lot. Yeah. And so how do we make sure they don't get surprised? And I mean, that would say, I had no idea. If I would have, I would have gotten out. I mean, I don't remember having. This statute has a long and checkered history, to say the least. And so, but I don't recall all of the discussion we engaged in over the years to as we were rebuilding the program to make it all work. This particular conversation, I don't remember. I understand it now. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea. It's a good bill. I'm just worried that I don't remember what notice is afforded the transferee of the fact that they are exposed to this kind of possible obligation.
Chair Haas, Senator Benz, that concern is part of what led to the legislation being brought forward initially. Is there, other than the tax demand, I'm not aware of a notice that gets given. And given the awkwardness of dealing with timing when someone dies and who gets notices how and when, it becomes questionable as to how notice would get given in this kind of circumstance. But that was not something, how to give notice or the effects of notice was not under consideration when we put the bill together.
Thank you.
No other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Department of Revenue, Mark Garst, did you want to weigh in on the discussion?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue. So Senator Benz, 90 days is the minimum time, but in reality, people are gonna have quite a bit longer than that. We don't begin collection until August in the year following the date of death. So if you died in December, you would have at least until August to actually, before we would actually even start the collection activity. So the 90 days is kind of a, It's a very minimum amount of time that's in there, and it does give people that ability to get out of the home. And then the only other thing I wanted to clarify is that you're not necessarily on the hook for the full amount of the deferral lien. The statute reads that you're liable for the positive amount, if any, remaining after subtracting the amount of all liens prior to the Department of Revenue's liens for deferred taxes from the real market value of the homestead entered on the last certified assessment roll. So in reality, we will write off part of the debt if we take your real market value from last year minus any mortgages that are ahead of us in priority. That's the amount that we'll actually try and collect on. So we don't try and collect on the full amount. I think the issue is that sometimes the real market value might be higher than what they can actually sell the house for. Say that the assessor didn't know that the house wasn't in very good shape, that type of thing.
Hold on, Mr. Chair, or Senator Benz. Not a follow-up. So, Mark, the question would be, are they on the hook if they're in the house on the 91st day for whatever the amount might be? Jointly and severally liable for that amount after netting out all of the other debt?
I think that Chair Hass, Senator Benz, I think that they could be. If, say, the Department of Revenue sent our collection folks out after the following August, and we heard, for instance, that the person had been living in there for 4 months, say, then, yeah, I think that they're under this language, I think that they're then liable. And 90 days was, you know, we went through a formal rulemaking process when we adopted this rule, and 90 days was what we felt like was something. When we originally started using this collection authority, we realized that we had come out of the gates a little hot and had and we adopted these rules in order to self-limit ourselves a little bit to make sure that we were giving people a fair shake, and 90 days was the amount of time that we had come up with, and this basically adopts our rule language into statute.
So let's assume the hypothetical, and August arrives, they have now been in the house 6 months, and they are notified that they owe an amount that's equal to the net value of the property in excess of the liens, and that number is, let's say, $40,000. What terms do you arrange for them to pay it back?
Chair Hass, Senator Benz, so I'm not really our collections expert, but, you know, you do have rights as far as how we will collect on you. But I think that the Department of Revenue, the legislature has told us that, you know, it's important that we get the money that the state is owed. And so we would use whatever authority we could. There are certain limitations on what income we're able to collect on and that type of thing, but we would, I mean, I think that by any definition, we would be fairly aggressive in trying to get that money. It goes back into the deferral fund, and then it's used to pay the taxes for future seniors who may need to use the program.
So the thing I am most concerned about is that these folks would not know that they are going to be exposed to that kind of liability by having stayed in the house longer than the 90 days. That's what's of greatest concern to me. So as long as that is somehow addressed so they're not surprised, then it all makes sense. If they are surprised, it doesn't.
Of course, they're not going to be liable anymore. It's not a terrible surprise like it would be now.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm not following that.
What's the current policy under your rule now, Mark?
It's the, I'm sorry, Chair Hass, it's the same policy that's being adopted into the statute.
Okay, that they would not be liable? That they would be liable?
If they, as long as they move out within 90 days, they're not liable.
Senator Benz?
Yeah, that's it, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so the concern is that they wouldn't, in our hypothetical, the parent passes away in December. The 90 days pass in March. They don't get notice of anything until August, July. They get a tax notice or something, I'm not sure what. And now at that point, they suddenly realize they're liable because the liens under our hypothetical are less than
let's assume there's exactly $40,000 worth of equity in the house. They owe $40,000, let's assume. And they get a bill and they say, and the state justifiably says, we want our $40,000. They go, oh my God, we got to sell the house. And so you get the real estate commission, you've got all kinds of weird things happen, but they're instantly liable jointly and severally for that full $40,000. Have I got it right? They wouldn't have known because under a hypothetical, they don't know unless there's some sort of a notice, some way of making sure that's, because I'm okay with it as long as I know.
Sure. Chair Hass, I don't want to, you know, tell you something that I don't know here today. So I would want to take that back to the office. I'd want to ask people what the noticing looks like. And I mean, we do have annual notices, obviously, that the senior receives. But I think your question more is to the heir and to let them know that they have this ability.
That's it.
Thank you, Mark.
Oregon State Bar. Actually, I just would like to address Senator Vance's question, if possible.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, again, Christopher Hamilton for the record. Senator Bence, if I understand your question correctly, you're looking at a situation where the individuals in question have actually inherited the house, have some title to it, and then the tax lien becomes the issue, which is distinct from the situation that we're trying to address with the bill. 2460 is aimed at a situation where the heirs can't inherit anything from the house because the house has no value. But it has value, but the value is overwhelmed by the debts against the house. And so if the heirs are staying in the house in that circumstance, then there are probably other issues that the foreclosing bank is going to be more interested in dealing with then we're going to end up with out of the property tax deferral program, because at that point they're staying on in a house they don't have a right to be in. If there's a house for the heirs to inherit right to, or if there's enough equity in the house for the heirs to inherit the right to it, then this bill wouldn't affect their rights one way or the other. The senior property tax deferral lien would still apply to them, because that lien would have to get cleared to transfer the title.
Yeah, no questions.
Okay. Senator Taylor.
Just maybe I missed something. How do they know about this provision? Just because they'll be notified that the 90 days, I mean, how does the communication work? That was the only question I had. For either of you, I mean, how does the...
Sure. So Chair Hass, Senator Taylor, folks at the office are listening, and they sent me a little lifeline. And basically, the first notice is that the house has a lien, right? There is a lien on the home. So that's one way that folks would know that the deferral program is involved in the property. And then secondly, the tax statement also mentions that there's deferral. I think that to Senator Bence's question, I don't think it would be unreasonable that we would add some kind of statement to the notice that talks about, you know, this liability that can transfer. I don't think it's a secret. I wouldn't be surprised if it appears somewhere in instructions, but I would want to run that down before I said that for sure.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, gentlemen, thank you. This is a public hearing on 2460, and we'll let it breathe for a while, maybe come back with some changes. And that clears our deck for today, so we will adjourn.